appearance for the record and identify any person attending the pre-hearing conference with you.
Sure. Good morning, Your Honor. Matthew Loftus on behalf of Xcel Energy. Ms. Deb Paulson is with me in this room, rate case manager for the North Dakota Electric rate case. Mr. Mike Bradley is here as well. He is our outside counsel. We also have Gail Barranco participating by phone and Dave Cedarquist as well.
Thank you, Mr. Loftus. Mr. Grumman, please state your appearance for the record and identify any commission staff attending the pre-hearing conference with you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Along with myself is Mitch Armstrong, co-counsel, and also I'm Chris Merle and Mike Diller from advocacy staff.
All right. Mr. Armstrong, you should state your appearance for the record, please.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General on case numbers PU-10657 and PU-1155.
And last but not least, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, Commission Advisor, and also present is Patrick Vaughn.
I also a note, not necessarily for the record, but for the advice of counsel, that at my request, Commission staff Scott Sheldon and Steve Call are here to assist us as necessary and as they can to facilitate the telephone testimony of witnesses, which I anticipate will be a matter to be resolved for the pre-hearing conference. Let's begin with this question of presentation of testimony and the use of telephone testimony. But let me preface that, I think, counsel, by saying that I am somewhat concerned that considering there has been no public hearing of these matters before this consolidated hearing, that we have for the public a statement of purpose, or at least have the hearing structured for the public so that they will understand what this settlement agreement is all about, what it covers, how it came to be about, and so on. Now, Mr. Loftus and I have talked about this, and I had suggested to Mr. Loftus that perhaps what this hearing needs is an opening statement. And I had kind of settled on that, and Mr. Grumman, I think that's probably true for the, but not necessarily, for advocacy staff. That is, I'm inclined to approach this hearing rather in terms of, as you would a civil case where you set the stage, tell the judge or the jury, as the case may be, what this case is about, how it came to be, and what the resolution is that you expect or hope, as the case may be, to have for the disposition of the case. I'm not, in thinking about it since, I'm not so sure that's necessary. I don't presume to tell counsel how to present their case, but I really do, as everyone knows, I assume the hearing will be streamed on the internet. I really have no idea whether anybody ever listens. But on the other hand, you might be surprised who is listening. And in any event, as often happens, somebody later is going to say, "How did this happen?" And, of course, they can get the record of the hearing on the internet. It's not any trick. So in any of those circumstances, I really think it's necessary that the public understand how it happens that what the commission is considering is a settlement agreement rather than hearing evidence from both sides of the case. So why don't it and perhaps this has got the reason I bring this up initially is how does this affect the presentation of witnesses? Mr. Loftus, if you've given this any further thought, I'd welcome your comment. Followed Mr. Grumman, Mr. Armstrong, by yours.
Sure, Your Honor. I mean, it sounds like really what you're talking about is an opening statement that comprehensively discusses the background of how these proceedings arose, and then kind of going through the process of how we arrived at this settlement following the submittal of testimony and the discovery process. And I'm more than happy to provide that type of an opening statement. And I don't think it will in any way negatively affect our witnesses being presented because, for instance, our only witness that we intend to call will provide a thorough opening statement to support the settlement itself, but the opening statement that I can provide can kind of provide all the history up until that point. If that's something that sounds okay to you, Your Honor, and to the parties, then I'm happy to provide that opening statement at the beginning of the hearing on the 18th.
Well, that's exactly what I had in mind, Mr. Loftus. The only reason I bring it up now is that I want to be sure that the counsel are comfortable with that and that maybe there isn't a better way to do it through the testimony of witnesses. Mr. Grumman, your thoughts, please.
Well, I guess specifically what I envision is respective opening statements by each, by Mr. Loftus, then myself, then NSP to begin with essentially their case in chief, for lack of better words. Him submitting his witness for direct and kind cross-examination. And then termination of his case in chief with ours. We'll have two witnesses available. Before all this, of course, I don't want to take things out of order. Of course, the exhibits we can get into later, but what we're understanding is there's going to be some type of pre-filing method for the exhibits so that there'll be a stipulation of foundation. So in the grand scheme, I guess that's how I envision things.
Well, I'm comfortable with that, counsel, if that works for you, Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Judge, and I agree with what Mr. Grumman said, and I would just point, you know, for your reference, if there's anything you want to add at the beginning of the hearing, there is attached to the settlement agreement as Exhibit A is a pretty all-inclusive history of the docketing and filing and dates relevant to the settlement agreement, which is what I assume Mr. Loftus' opening statement would kind of touch upon, and then advocacy staff would generally just address it from our position, but it would be very, very similar, and I think it would be helpful, and that's a document that could be referenced by the public, made aware where it's at, to get a written explanation of the history of the case, too.
All right. I'm very comfortable with that. So unless anyone else has anything further to add on that subject, let me move on to the first item of our agenda by the notice, and that is the testimony of witnesses. Who is going to testify? How are they going to testify? And what witnesses are going to be available for any anticipated questions the commissioners may have? And how are those people going to be made available? Mr. Loftus, you're going to open, so let's start with you, please.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. just, I guess, as a quick note, today the parties are going to file witness and exhibit lists, which will set forth, obviously, both of those items. What we had envisioned, Your Honor, and I believe as Mr. Grumman mentioned a couple minutes ago, was having the parties wave foundation for these witnesses in an effort to try to streamline the entry of testimony and other evidence into the record. And so what we had envisioned was calling Ms. Laura McCartan, who is our policy witness. She would be the only witness that we intend to call at the hearing, she will provide an opening statement in support of the settlement and then be available for any questions from the commission after that point. And as a part of that, as a part of the agreement to waive foundation, at that point, Your Honor, we would enter into evidence our entire rate case filing, including all pre-filed direct testimony of the witnesses on behalf of the company. Ms. McCartan also has a piece of settlement testimony that was separately filed fairly recently in support of the settlement, so we would also enter that into the record. And then at some point, as a joint exhibit, I would envision that both the staff and the company would offer and introduce into the record the settlement agreement itself. And as I noted, so Ms. McCartan would be made available for any questions from the commission, and the company would also envision having one or two of our other witnesses present there in the hearing room, and all of our other witnesses available by phone in the event that the commissioners have questions that either go beyond the scope of Ms. McCartan's testimony or knowledge, or just simply requires somebody with greater expertise in order to provide an answer.
So will Ms. McCartan testify by telephone or in person?
She will be there in person, Your Honor.
And then the other witnesses that you will have available in person, is it your expectation? I understand you don't have a crystal ball, Mr. Loftus, but is it your expectation that the other witnesses you will have available should be able to answer any further questions of the commissioners that Ms. McCartan cannot respond to?
Here's our plan, Your Honor, and tell me if this sounds okay to you and obviously the parties as well. But so we would call Ms. McCartan as a witness, but we would also plan on having Mr. John Fellin and Mr. Steve Huzo in the room. John Fellin is our revenue requirements witness. Steve Huzo is our rate design witness. So to the extent that the commissioners had any questions delving into those areas, Mr. Fellin or Mr. Huzo would be available in person to come up, take the stand, and answer those questions. Now, if the commissioners had any other questions beyond the policy area, support of the settlement, revenue requirements, or rate design, all of our other witnesses would be available by the phone. And what I envisioned then, Your Honor, was, for instance, just as an example, if the commissioners had a question with respect to return on equity, then Ann Bulkley would be available by phone. And if this would be acceptable, Your Honor, I could say, you know, that's a question, commissioners, that could be most efficiently addressed by Ms. Ann Bulkley, who is available by phone, and then she could respond to that question. And, of course, all of our witnesses would be listening over the phone for the hearing to know that, in fact, a question has arisen that requires a response from them.
So they would be listening by phone exactly as you are participating now, with this same kind of connection.
That's right. In fact, I guess they could actually be watching as well over the webcast.
Yes, that's true, to my knowledge, when it works. So then we could, in due order, in course of the hearing, we could then, or you could then, call a witness listening. She or he could be sworn and then proceed to respond to questions from the commissioners. And, of course, advocacy staff, counsel, commission counsel, so on.
Exactly, Your Honor. That's correct.
Mr. Grumman?
Well, Your Honor, I was just remembering I had a trial about a year ago where we did something like this. I guess I'm going to begin with exhibits, where there was a stipulation of foundation, and essentially at the beginning of the case in chief, we each side respectively submitted a packet of exhibits. I remember one of the commissioners asking, you know, would there have been a way for them, they being the commissioners, to be able to review the exhibits prior to the hearing? And I'm wondering if there's something we could work out in that regard. And I guess first maybe I'll just posit a question to Mr. Loftus as to whether or not the exhibits that he's planning on submitting into the record, are those completed at this point, or will they be completed very shortly?
This is Deb Paulson. What we have done is created an exhibit list and took the liberty of pre-numbering, assigning a number to each of the items. As I look down the list sitting in front of me, all of these items are already listed on the commission's website. So when we could file the exhibit list, in which case a commissioner, staff, or judge yourself could look at, if you agree to this numbering method, could look at an exhibit number, see the item that's there, and I believe quite easily find that particular exhibit on the website, with the exception of a number typographical error, which we had discussed with staff in the settlement agreement. I believe maybe you, Matt, have discussed with Mr. Grumman how you want to handle that. But other than that numeric correction, which we would submit with a full settlement agreement, errata, to make it complete, all of the other exhibits should be on the commission's website right now.
Fantastic. I guess I don't want to interject here, but and that's essentially going to be our exhibits as well. They're commission advisors are actually here right now, so I'm assuming that it could be simply as them informing them that the exhibits that will be at the hearing are already in the docket. So, and of course, then we'll have a formal submission into the record during the hearing. So unless anyone has any further questions about the exhibits, I guess that makes sense to me. Very shortly, we'll be submitting our summary witness and exhibit list. It's already been shared with counsel, and that'll be docketed accordingly. I'm assuming Xcel Energy will be doing the same thing. So I guess the next thing to talk about is our witnesses. Mike Diller will be here. We'll have three witnesses all in particular.
Well, Mr. Grumman, let me interrupt first. Do you have any problems or suggestions with the proposal that Mr. Loftus has for the presentation of his evidence?
No, I don't.
No, that should work. Mr. Armstrong, I assume?
I have no problems with it, Judge. The only thing I would prefer is if we got all the exhibits out of the way right at the beginning.
No, listen, you fellas want to talk about the exhibits. I don't want to talk about the exhibits.
Testimony? I have no problem with
that. I'll get to that, and I'm very happy to say that, to tell you that Mr. Grumman and I are on the same track, so we'll get there. But let's get these witnesses.
No, I have no problem with that, Judge.
And Pat, Mr. Fawn, is this going to? Does this sound like this is going to work for the commissioners and the commission advisory staff?
I think it will. We did have a question about whether, when the exhibits are filed, and there was mention of an exhibit list with exhibit numbers, will exhibits, then numbered exhibits, be filed, the whole package of exhibits by each of the...
Well, we're going to get to that, but the answer is yes. Okay. I can't imagine doing it any other way, but yeah, let's not worry about the exhibits yet.
Okay.
Just be sure that we... What I'm concerned about is my experience with telephone testimony is at best mixed. Now, the system that we're using now on Xcel's end with Mr. Loftus and his people there, that is as trouble-free as I've seen anything. Now, I'm not sure how reliable it is, Mr. Loftus, but if this system works, I mean, I'm very comfortable with this. I think this will be excellent for the hearing without unnecessary travel by anyone. But I want to be sure that other counsel have the same impression I do, and I want to get that resolved. So, Mr. Grumman, let's proceed with the witnesses you're going to offer.
So, as indicated before, we have three witnesses. One will be present, Mike Diller, and there will be testimony in that regard. Our other two witnesses, my summary witness and exhibit list right now, I say that they're going to be available to testify, and that is McGarry and Barry, Mr. Barry. However, it appears that there probably is going to be some testimony probably submitted by Mr. McGarry. As far as Barry, the only thing that I should bring up right now is I apologize, this should have been figured out before right now, but there may be a time conflict for Mr. Barry, so there may be a request by advocacy staff that perhaps he may testify at some point, maybe during what would have been normally reserved for Mr. Loftus, and I'm assuming Mr. Loftus and I could get something scheduled, i.e. that we may have to call Barry out of order to be able to reconcile his schedule, but that's something that I'm working out, assuming that's not going to be a big issue. But essentially, those will be our three witnesses.
Generally, I don't have any problem with the presentation of the witnesses, provided that your counsel is comfortable that it's not going to create a problem for the commissioners, and that counsel agree. And keeping in mind again, counsel, that I'm concerned that we have a record. Well, I'm concerned that we not only have a presentation that works for the commissioners, but I'm also concerned that we have a record for the public, both people who may be listening, but also for any member of the public who later on says, what happened here? How did this, what's this settlement about, that they can go online and download and listen to the record of the hearing and have as good an understanding as we can provide to them of the process of this settlement agreement. So that now, are both McGarry and Barry, are they both going to testify by telephone, Mr. Grumman?
They are.
Well, then, Mr. Sheldon, I'm kind of to you then. How is this going to, you got one connection set up now for Xcel, and that's Northern States Power witnesses. Now comes the time to call advocacy staff's witness, McGarry. How is that going to work? Is that going to work?
I guess my question would be, is at some point, is the NSP witness going to drop off? Can we hang up that phone and dial another one, or does that person need to continue to be online?
Actually, and Your Honor, I apologize for interrupting, but Scott, one thought is the company could just set up one conference call number like we have this morning and have sufficient number of lines for not only for our witnesses to participate, but to have Blue Ridge Consulting witnesses call into the same number, and that way we only need that one, you know, that one number. In fact, all of our witnesses but two will be in the same room here in Minneapolis. So I'm confident that it'll be reliable and should work as well as it is this morning.
Excuse me, and this is Deb Paulson. Just to answer your question, in this system, any number of people can call in, provided we have the line set up. So there would be a line set up for the commission room, as many as you need for Blue Ridge, for our witnesses to participate in the single room, and the two who will be in other locations. And then those people individually call in and can drop off or stay on as needed without disconnecting the rest of the participants.
That's what I want to hear. I'm assuming, Mr. Sheldon, now you can make these arrangements with the people at Xcel and get this worked out so that this works for the hearing.
I have to tell you, if it works out as it did today, I received an email from Mr. Grumman this morning with the number and the ID number. If that's the way it would happen on this day, I am very comfortable with that.
Yeah, Mr. Grumman.
I have nothing further to add.
Mr. Loftus or anyone at Excel, is there any reason why this won't work for the hearing? Do we have anything that we, any arrangements, anything that needs to be done here at the Public Service Commission to be sure we've got a telephone connection?
I don't believe, Your Honor. It'll be the same process, and we'll be happy to provide that well in advance to Scott or to and to Mark. That way it can be set up, and it'll work just like it did or just like it is this morning.
Yep. I'm comfortable with that. Mr. Fawn?
I just had a thought came to mind about court reporter. Is there...
There may be a court reporter. Mr. Loftus, have you decided about a court reporter?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Paulson has reserved or set up a court reporter that will be there for the hearing to transcribe that on that day. And, Your Honor, I apologize, but going back to the call-in number, I guess the only thing that we will need to know is, I guess, how many lines the staff will need. For instance, do we need a separate line for both Mr. Berry and Mr. McGrary? And Scott, I can just call you directly if that's okay, but just to find out how many lines you think the staff will need.
To answer that question, yes, that's not too much of an inconvenience. One separately for McGrary and one separately for Berry.
Okay.
Eddie, Mr. Fawn.
And I guess all the witnesses that are going to be participating by phone will still be available to be recalled by commissioners or for questions?
Yes, I assume so. Is there any question about that, counsel? Anyone?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, that'll be fine. They'll be available for that.
Right. No, I think, Mr. Fawn, we assumed that that was going to be the case. At least I did. So I think you can be comfortable about that. Mr. Grumman?
And from our end, I mean, we're still waiting to hear back from Mr. Berry in that regard. So, I mean, I think that's the only potential problem in that regard, but I'm assuming it shouldn't be. As far as him being called out of order and him having a certain block of time, that he'll be available. But Mr. Fawn brings up a good question, so that's something that will get worked out.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Now, counsel, the problem, small problem, I hope. We have the testimony of Mr. Galper. As much as I know about Mr. Galper's interest in these cases is essentially in my email to him. Let me just tell counsel generally, Mr. Galper is, based on my telephone conversation with him, he's entirely reasonable. He's got no axe to grind. His concern and complaint, but less a complaint than a concern, is with a reliability of service in his neighborhood. My impression is he has spoken at length with, I know he's spoken with commission staff. My impression is he's also spoken with Northern States power personnel. I really don't know at what level, but he, I'm assuming he's known to the Northern States power people in Fargo. He's familiar. He's familiar with testimony to legislative committees. So offered to prepare a statement, essentially his testimony, but which I gather he would expand upon for his oral testimony. But he'll file a statement. He'll provide a PDF file to all of counsel tomorrow, I think, if he will be able to testify. He's unable to attend the hearing. I didn't really quiz him about why he couldn't attend to the hearing, but he has some commitment to family members, I gather, maybe for some kind of medical appointment, and he's just not able to come to the hearing. I expect that we can make him available to testify or provide the facilities for him to testify by telephone. He's available, if you recall my email, at two times during the day, one from 9:30 to 10:30, I think. And he says that, well, he could delay a little bit past 10:30, but by a quarter to 11, he's got to go. And so I'm not really very interested in trying to get him scheduled at around 9:30. That's really too early for us anyway, I think. And it really, his testimony really wouldn't fit into the presentation. I think it's better that we schedule him at the end of the hearing. I would suggest that we try to guess about what time he would testify, and in fact, I think probably over the noon hour at some recess later in the day, someone could call him and give him a better estimate about when he may be expected to testify. My question, Mr. Loftus, is whether XL is willing to provide a line to him for his testimony, and then I would suggest that at the conclusion of advocacy staff's presentation that I would call Mr. Galper. I'm guessing his testimony would be, 15, 20 minutes, although you know how that goes. But he's not, I don't think he's going to run on. He's very reasonable. He's articulate. He seems organized. And I really don't think his testimony will present any surprises. That is, I would expect that whatever statement he provides to counsel will fairly and substantially summarize what he proposes to say. That is, if he proceeds as people normally do to testify to legislative committees, that's how I would expect that to go. So my first question, I guess, is to Mr. Loftus for any comments, suggestions, objections, if you will, whatever, for Mr. Galper's testimony for the hearing.
Your Honor, we are more than happy to add a line for Mr. Galper to use for his, for testifying as a part of that hearing. And I agree with the process that you said. I think that sounds reasonable to give Mr. Galper a call. Maybe around, like you said, the noon hour, just to give him an update on how the hearing's going and when he can expect to testify. The company in general doesn't have an objection. However, it would be good to be able to see that testimony before we give you a definitive answer on that. And what we would offer, if this is acceptable to Your Honor, is once we see his testimony or his statement, we can submit a letter into the record.
The letter saying what?
Either that we don't object or that there is a basis for an objection.
No, I would rather not do that, Mr. Loftus. I would just call him as a witness. Under the commission's rules, he's a protestant, I think, but I wouldn't even make a point of that. I would simply call him as a member of the public who wishes to address the commission. As soon as we call him, then Mr. Loftus, if you have an objection, you should object. on the record, and we'll deal with it that way. And if during the course of his testimony, if you feel necessary for your record to object, then make your objection, and we'll deal with it. And then it's all on the record as part of the hearing.
That sounds like a fair approach, Your Honor.
Yeah, because you may have some objections as to hearsay, perhaps, if you choose to raise them. But just in listening to him, I mean, he's just a customer with an opinion, and I would be surprised. I really don't, other than technical things like hearsay, or maybe a foundation for an opinion about something. I really don't think Mr. Galper is going to be a problem, unless he is going to behave differently for the hearing that he did in the course of his conversation with me. That's the way I would propose to proceed. Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Loftus. Ken, is it reasonable for Mr. Galper to be able to participate in your conference system the same way we are participating this morning? That is, when he's back from his appointments or whenever, can he dial the number and go through the process and join the conference and listen to the hearing? Or is that an unreasonable expectation for him?
No, Your Honor, that would be fine. We'd be happy to add a line for him. And if you'd like for me to, I mean, this is up to you, Your Honor, whatever process is best. But when we get that number set up and that caller ID, I can either email that to Mr. Galper or send it to you, and you can forward it on to him, or I can forward it to Scott. Whatever approach there you would prefer, but we are more than happy to add a line for Mr. Galper for testimony at the hearing.
Well, I think Mr. Loftus, that's very generous. Indeed, I guess I would use the word gracious for XL, and I think I certainly would think that would satisfy Mr. Galper for his participation, and he may not be that interested. He has no interest, let me just say, he has no interest in fact, no objection. He told me, if I recall correctly, and the key words here are if I recall correctly, because I really wasn't interested myself, but he said he had no objection to the rate issues. He doesn't object to a rate increase for Northern States Power. His concern is the reliability of the electrical service that his neighborhood receives, wherever he lives in Fargo. And specifically, he is specifically complaining about the maintenance policy for the underground cable that provides his electrical service. That's the sum and substance of his testimony. So as you will recall from my email, I said I would call him tomorrow to be sure that, well, actually to tell him whether or not we could connect him, so to speak, by telephone. And I'll tell him about the arrangements. I think, Mr. Loftus, I would like to run this whole telephone system through Mr. Sheldon. I would really like to have one person who is the contact person for any questions about the telephone. So I would like to have you, if you will, advise Scott Sheldon about what Mr. Galper has to do, and I would like Mr. Sheldon to communicate that with Mr. Galper, and so if Mr. Galper has any questions about that, he can call Mr. Sheldon, and that avoids me getting involved any further with Mr. Galper's testimony as such. All right, counsel, have we any questions, any problems with Mr. Galper's testimony as we've discussed it, and Mr. Loftus?
No, Your Honor, that process sounds fine.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Jeff Kotsako?
No.
Yeah, okay. That's good. I'm pleased. That'll work out fine. Have we got counsel before we move on? Does anybody have any further questions or suggestions regarding the witness testimony?
The only thing I would suggest from Mr. Sheldon is when he speaks with Mr. Galporter to try and figure out when he's available, because it's
after 1:30.
After 1:30.
My plan is, I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear. He is available, at least the last time we talked, he will be available after 1:30, anytime after 1:30 on the 18th. And I would plan to call him at the conclusion of advocacy staff's presentation.
Okay, thank you, Judge. I was just...
Yeah, that would be the... And incidentally, counsel knows, I'm sure, that there is some possibility we've got people who show up who may have something to say, and that's the time that I would call for testimony from anybody present, any members of the public who are present for the hearing. But I'll start with him. Okay. If nothing further regarding witnesses, let's move on to exhibits. I think what I would like to do, counsel, is I suggest that we put all of the exhibits together. Though all of the exhibits that are already filed, you really, Mr. Loftus and Mr. Grumman, silly as it sounds, I guess, I hesitate to use the word silly, but you really need to have an additional copy now for the record, notwithstanding that they're filed, and they should be numbered starting with Northern States Powers exhibits. I would like to have them numbered seriatim, 1, 2, 3, right down the line, and when you get to the end of Northern States Power, then you do advocacy staff with the next succeeding number, and so that they're all in order. I do not believe, well, good question. Well, anyway, whatever additional witnesses, exhibits we have, whether we have an exhibit from Mr. Galper or whether there's somebody else who shows up who's got an exhibit, we'll just continue that seriatim. And I think, counsel, Mr. Loftus, Mr. Grumman, you should come to the hearing with the exhibits marked in two piles and put them together in one pile, and the two of you jointly offer the exhibits at the as part of your opening. That is, okay. As part of before Mr. Loftus begins his... No, I disagree. Mr. Loftus should do his opening statement, and Mr. Grumman, you're going to do your opening statement following Mr. Loftus's, or are you going to wait... Okay, well then, counsel, I suggest you do your opening statements, and then before Mr. Loftus begins with his first witness, say that the applicant has the exhibits to offer by stipulation together with the exhibits for advocacy staff. Just move those into the record on a stipulation. We don't need a written stipulation, but just a statement, and put them all into the record, and I'll receive them all as a group pursuant to the stipulation, and we're done.
So it's my understanding how they'll be marked as NSP Exhibit 1, 2, 3, et cetera, and then for the beginning of how we're going to mark our exhibits as Advocacy Staff Exhibit 1.
I don't object to that, but my preference would be to mark them one through the end in order? Why do you, why, now, listen.
There's a good reason for why I'm at.
All right. I don't really care how the exhibits are marked. My personal preference, based on mostly the experience of my former life, is that I just mark them one through the end. So you don't have to, you don't have more than one exhibit that's seven, and whether it's prefaced by advocacy staff or NSB.
Yeah. I mean, but, the only reason why I would bring it up is just in case that in the interim there would be an added exhibit, and then it screws it up. Where if it's
no, it doesn't. It's NSB. A new number. But listen, suit yourself.
Yeah,
I don't really care. However, counsel agrees, but give me an exhibit list. The court reporter is going to will very much appreciate an exhibit list. I just take the exhibits in the pile and put them on the court reporter's desk, and away we go.
That sounds good. I'm sure Mr. Loftus and I can get something worked out.
No, if counsel agrees, that's fine. I don't really care. Frankly, I don't.
So, Your Honor, again, I apologize for interrupting, but I'm happy to call Mr. Groom. In fact, Ms. Paulson actually already has our exhibit list ready here. So, Mark, I can send this to you, and then if you'd like, you can add your exhibits on to the end of the company's list, and then we can just submit a joint exhibit list. If that approach sounds okay.
Yeah, no, that certainly could be one way we could go. This makes sense.
So then, okay. Does counsel agree what we put the exhibits in at the conclusion of opening statements and before Northern States Power's first witness?
That'd be fine, Your Honor.
Yeah. And they're all in. Now that, again, I'm not in the course of, this doesn't mean you, counsel can do as they wish with... Sometimes for a witness's testimony, you like to have some exhibits or something for the commissioners to look at or reference in the course of the testimony. Fine, you can continue to use copies of the exhibits for the commissioners or however you wish. But the exhibits I'm talking about are for the record. I would just put them all together with the exhibit list on top. Sitting on the court reporter's desk, and we don't have to worry about him anymore. Anything
and
further,
Your
with regard to exhibits, Mr. Fawn?
A question about whether recently NSP filed a letter that was in response to an email concerning discussions about EPA requirements, and I'm wondering if NSP had planned to file that as an exhibit.
Mr. Lott,
it's his desire.
Yeah, Your Honor, and Mr. Fawn, we had not planned on including that as an exhibit, but if the advisory staff would like for us to do that, then we're happy to add that to the list.
Mr. Fawn,
we would like you to file that as an exhibit, and also to be. Remember to be prepared. As far as staff knows, advisory staff knows, commissioners are still interested in discussing that at the hearing. That
okay.
Topic.
No, that's very helpful. Thanks.
And that witness would be participating. That witness be here in person or by phone?
Well, we had planned on having that, and actually, that would not be a witness who would pre-file testimony. But we were planning on having that person participate by phone. However, if it's the commission's preference to have that person there, you know, in person at the hearing, then we can arrange that as well. So
we don't know at this point. I think it would be okay by phone, but just wanted to know if we have a chance to discuss with commissioners. We'll find out. I think by phone would be fine. At this point.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll just plan on having him participate by phone unless you advise us otherwise, but that sounds good, and he will definitely be available to answer any questions.
All right. Anything further, Mr. Fawn?
No, not really.
And I apologize, Your Honor and Mr. Fawn, but just to clarify, that witness will be available until 3 o'clock on that day to answer any questions about the EPA project. Just as a note.
Well, I'm assuming, Mr. Fawn, you would expect that any questions regarding that matter would come up during Northern States Power's case in chief, so to speak. That's not going to come up in with regard to advocacy staff, is it? No.
No.
So that, but obviously we need to know that. But I would think we'll be okay with that time frame. I hope we will. We will.
Thank you.
Anything further regarding exhibits? Counsel? Anyone?
No, Judge.
Just to clarify, Your Honor, how many copies? So obviously we need one copy for the record, one copy for Your Honor.
No.
Then how many additional copies, or how many copies total of the exhibits should we have?
You do not need a copy for me. Mr. Loftus, I mean, if an objection, or well, first of all, I don't anticipate any objections, and if there really is something that I need to look at, if something comes up in the course of testimony and I need to look at an exhibit, I can look at the court reporters. So it's not necessary to make a copy for me, Mr. What is
I would suggest that we have a copy for each of the commissioners just in case they need it, and maybe a couple of extra copies for the public, but we can work that out. Legally, we're required to have one copy, but I think we should have at least a couple extra copies, probably five total, three for the commissioners, some for the public if they're here, and that should suffice, I would say.
Boy, do we generate paper. But
yeah, we do. Yeah.
We were just going to say we don't know if the commissioners want an extra copy.
I hesitate to put that pile in front of each one of the commissioners. I really don't think that's necessary.
It's fine with me. If they don't need it, they'll let us know.
Well, let's defer that to advisory staff to figure out.
This meeting is scheduled to end in 5 minutes.
I agree with that, by the way. Mr. Loftus, let's let advisory staff advise you for copies.
Okay, that sounds good, Your Honor.
Yeah, let's not generate a lot of paper that is not going to get used. All right, anything further regarding exhibits? Lastly, my last question or issue, at least according to the notice, I think is resolved. I would generally think that we're going to have to leave it to counsel to do what differentiation is necessary among the three cases, and there probably isn't much differentiation necessary between the rate cases, and I leave it to counsel to do the best that they can for their presentation to make what differentiation is necessary. But having in mind, again, counsel, please, not only the commissioners, obviously it's the most important thing you have to do is to inform them adequately, but also try to keep in mind, please, that we may need to inform the public also. So, but let me just raise, is there anything that counsel suggests is necessary or desirable to structure the hearing to differentiate among the three cases? Well, let's do the let's Mr. Loftus.
Your Honor, I think it's fine to have them all together. I can, as a part of the opening statement, I'm happy to talk about how the third proceeding, I mean, how all three relate to one another, but in particular, the proceeding regarding the DOE settlements and how that came to be a part of the settlement agreement.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that will be sufficient. Mr. Grumman?
Yeah, I agree.
Mr. Armstrong?
I agree.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
That's fine.
Okay.
The commission does plan on having a motion consolidating on the next agenda, though, for hearing, consolidating the three cases.
Right. Well, that's
consistent with
the notice.
Previous, yeah, the notice and the previous consolidation
right.
Discussion.
Okay. Finally, counsel, anything further that we need to consider in preparation for the consolidated hearing, Mr. Loftus?
Your Honor, nothing from us.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No, Your Honor.
Well, it's 11, not even 11 o'clock, and I think we are finished. Anything further for the record, counsel? Mr. Loftus?
Your meeting reservation has been extended. 15 minutes.
No, Your Honor, but thank you, and I appreciate you having this conference call today. It was helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Loftus, for your facilities. These work like a charm, may I say. Mr. Grumman, anything further for the record?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
The record for this pre-hearing conference is closed. Thank you, counsel.